Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. We're at hauntedplayground.com. We're at liveparanormal.com. That's where the network is. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. I'm a psychic medium, an interfaith minister, and a 27-year talk radio host. And this is Haunted Playground, where every week I gather the brightest and most beautiful and loveliest minds and hearts and souls in the paranormal and spiritual communities, and we talk about everything from life after death to maybe you think there's a Loch Ness Monster in your pool. All of that belongs here on Haunted Playground. Please join us at liveparanormal.com every Wednesday at 6 p.m. and at one of our international affiliates, iHeartRadio.com, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podmatic, Podomatic, Podbean, Blog Talk Radio, and the list goes on and on. My guest today on the show is a wonderfully talented author and speaker. I had the honor this year to appear not only on her upcoming television show, but also to be part of a paranormal documentary with her. And I've had so many people from that doc here on the show to talk about it. And I'm just so honored to be here and to be back on Haunted Playground with her. She was the very first guest on Haunted Playground when we moved to this new affiliate in January. And I will probably just have her on the show again and again and again and again and again. So you better get used to it. Ladies and gentlemen, my wonderful friend, Andrea Perrin. How are you, sweetheart?
I'm so well, my darling. And, you know, fancy meeting you here.
I know, right? Now, what's going on with that? It's like we just did this. It feels like we just did.
I know. It does. It feels like we just did. It's always my pleasure. It is my privilege to join you. I love what you do. I love how you do it. I love how you lift people up with your presence alone. You are really a truly an extraordinary. Well, let me put it to you this way. 10 years ago when I released my first book and I didn't know if there was going to be anybody out there who wanted to read my story. If I had realized then how it changed my life to tell it, to dig deep and have the courage to tell it in print, if I had known that you were going to be one of the gifts that the universe gave to me for making that leap of faith, I would have done it 40 years ago.
Wow. Mm. And how different our lives would have been.
Yeah.
That 40 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
I think we truly, well, thank you. That's probably the biggest compliment anybody's ever paid me. And I think for us to have been friends for 40 years and be able to be there for each other through a lot of situations that sort of metaphorically and sometimes literally kicked us in the crotch.
Yeah.
Dealing with people who try to dull your light, right? People who try to stop you from broadcasting and be so bright. I think folks like us who broadcast so empathically, like a lighthouse, we're always going to have people in our lives who are trying to bring us down. And
Yeah, my attitude about them is, you know, I know, and you've dealt with it, I've dealt with it, and, you know, my attitude is fuck them. I'm not even interested, honestly. You know, I don't care. I couldn't have done what I did with the trilogy. I couldn't have if I cared at all what anybody else was going to think about it. I didn't write it for everybody. I wrote it for you,
right.
And I wrote it for those of us who are like-minded, who know that spirit exists, who have had our own experiences. I wrote it to liberate others, to tell their own story. I wrote it for those who get it, and everybody else can, you know, hop on the caboose as the train goes by and, you know, start moving up the train car by car and learning their way and navigating through this treacherous journey that we're all on called life, and understand that we are not alone. We are completely surrounded by spirit, all of us, all the time. And that we're the ones that lock ourselves in our own 3D cage. And all the time, we are each in possession of the key to free ourselves. You know, and that might be heady, and it might be a little bit difficult to absorb, but... You know, one of my favorite lines in The Wizard of Oz, which I love that film. I've seen it probably as many times as years I've lived. When Glinda says to Dorothy, you had the power all along, you know, as she's clicking
right.
her ruby slippers together and she's, you know, I always think of the ruby slippers as like kind of a Ouija board. You know, it's not the board. It's not the plastic, and it's not the cardboard, and it's not the print on the cardboard. It's the energy and the
right.
intention that
mm-hmm.
creates whatever manifests with that just being a tool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that brings me to is the power of fear, which we are dealing with in extraordinary ways right now. We're dealing with the power of the fear of death. You know, we're all confronting our mortality. We're dealing with that. We're dealing with, you know, all the fears that have come with a pandemic that has turned everything on its head. We're dealing with fear of the normal fear of death. And what I've lectured about for more than a decade now is that we've basically, that human beings are basically fear-based carbon units, that
mm-hmm.
what we do instead of, you know, you and I both know that we are made of love. We are born of love. We are the essence of love. But there is also other human emotions that are so powerful that they can intervene and circumvent our superpower. And the one that is the worst culprit of all is fear. And how many people...
Yes.
relinquish their personal power to fear? How many people
yes.
at the end of their
so
lives wish
uh-huh.
that they had done this or done that or gone here or gone there or had that relationship that they were terrified to have? And as they're leaving this earth and breathing their last breath, they revisit the regrets of what they coulda, shoulda, woulda done had fear not been calling the shots in their lives. And so what I suggest
yes.
to people
so
is that they just embrace it for the function that it serves, which is to forewarn you. It's like your instinct and your intuition. Don't go there. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't get in the car with him. You know, don't go down that alley. You know, that's the purpose that it's supposed to serve. It's supposed to, you know, keep us alive to adulthood so that we can make, you know, logical choices and you know, give up the childish ways and the impetuous behavior. And it serves its purpose in childhood when we feel immortal and that we are never in any danger, and that is actually the period of our lives that is most dangerous. So it's supposed to serve a purpose in that respect. And it does for most people, you know, certainly everybody that survives to adulthood and the two eyes that are behind their mother's heads, that too, that's always factored in. But when you get to a point in your life, you know, I mean, really, really, my mother always knew. I mean, my mother always knew everything about everything all the time, all the time. But, you know, when you get to a point where you are so engrossed with fear that it manipulates you and you relinquish your power to it. You let it live your life for you and call the shot.
Yeah.
Then that's the time when you say, you know what, fear, I love you and I thank you for every single time that you ever intervened on my behalf, saved me from myself, from making a very poor decision. Thank you for all that you've done, and I love you and I appreciate you, but you're not the boss of me anymore. And then you've taken all of its power. It no longer has any power to make a decision for you. You can use it as a tool. You can use it as instinct and intuition, but it doesn't determine your destiny anymore. And so that's, you know, part of what I talk about when I lecture, is to dispel fear, which, of course, as you well know, is the stock in trade for most people who work in the paranormal. The whole idea behind, you know, spooky stuff is to scare you witless. And why people like that feeling of fear and trepidation, why they like to go into movie theaters and watch horrific things transpire in front of their eyes in imagery that is impaled into their brain permanently that they will never, ever forget, I don't understand. Because the only horror movie I have ever seen in my life is The Conjuring. And it's because I sort of kind of had to.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic. Oh, yeah. See, I love them. I love horror movies because I'm fascinated with the psychology behind the horror. So I just showed my girlfriend's 18-year-old daughter, who's like my spirit child. The other night we sat up late, the two of us, and she had never seen The Exorcist. So we watched The Exorcist. And, you know, there's such a psychology behind every horror film, behind every paranormal incident, whether it's factual or fictional.
Yeah.
We are human beings, and how we react to the horror, how we fight the monster, you know, what's going on inside of us, that to me is, that's what I love about the horror. I love the psychology of it and the human behavior, and to see how people react. And I'm also fascinated to see how films that are fictional hold up against, you know, nonfiction situations, and how, like about maybe a year ago, a friend of mine, he and his husband just got this giant TV. They'd never seen Poltergeist. I remember my mom taking me to see Poltergeist the year we moved to California. And, man, that film, right, made in 1980, it came out in 1981, still holds up beautifully with the way the paranormal community is represented, with the way it is to have to tell people you live in a haunted house, with the way we treat mediums, with the way paranormal investigative teams work. I mean, just beautiful. And I think it's important because I think we educate people on the spiritual and paranormal communities by allowing people to see fictional projects, fictional productions. And that's how a lot of people learn. I mean, people learn about darkness through watching a lot of movies about darkness, and people learn about spirituality sometimes from watching a movie about spirit. You know, sometimes people don't believe until an idea gets put in their head, and oftentimes that's something that I think the fictional programming is good for. You know what I mean? And the more high-end films that are made, like The Conjuring, and by that I mean, you know, films not made for $5, although there's nothing wrong with a film made for $5, but films that have good writing, good acting, good direction, you know, the more people believe. Like, how many people saw The Conjuring and suddenly it was healing for maybe some place they lived in their childhood in a place that was haunted? You know?
Yeah.
I think of everything as healing and learning. That's me.
Yeah,
I think of everything as, where's the lesson? How do we learn it? Where's the healing? And I think sometimes that stuff can be tremendously healing to people. Right? Why do we love slasher films? And he's like, I don't. We love slasher films because we like to cheer for the person who bests the monster, right? Because in our own lives, we best the monster on a regular basis. It might not be some, you know, psycho in a hockey mask, but it could be the psycho that sits at the cubicle next to you at work. So we like stories of human triumph. And I think some people like it in a, watch a movie like Rudy, and some people like it because, and they watch the Friday the 13th, you know? People have all different ways of finding healing. But I understand with you, it's a no-no. And I get it. I get it. I think those of us that grew up in paranormal situations, we all have different ways we deal with, you know, the paranormal moving forward. Did you just...
Yeah, well, I don't need to go into a... Yeah, after the way I grew up, I don't need to go into a theater to be scared. You know, it's
right.
And yeah, you know, I think back on my time living there, and you know, I had such a copacetic relationship with the spirits in the house. I was never once attacked in that house. I was never once I was never once put upon. My fear came for what was happening to my mother. My fear was about what was happening to my sisters, and that I couldn't stop it. And that was the most difficult thing of all, because I couldn't stop it. I could to an extent. I could communicate with them. And like if I had friends over, or if there, you know, there was company at the house and stuff started to manifest, and I could feel the temperature dropping in the room suddenly, I would just tell them, not a good time, not a good time, you know, please don't do this. And I could say it telepathically, and whatever was going on would stop. So I had that with the spirits, and I don't know why I did. I can't explain that, but I couldn't, when something was happening to one of my other family members, I could not stop that from, I could not spare them that experience. And I think it's because I wasn't supposed to spare them that experience, that they were supposed to have that experience, so that 30 plus years later, after we moved out of that house, I would have something to write about and to make their presence known in an entirely different way to the whole world.
Beautiful.
I really do believe everything happens with purpose and reason. Everything does.
Oh,
and
do
it
too.
Doesn't mean that I believe in determinism. You know, I mean, having earned a degree in philosophy, I spent an inordinate amount of time thinking about free will versus determinism. And I never understood why we had to choose one or the other. Why can't it be both? Why can't it be both?
Right.
Why can't we have our free will to make mistakes and to, you know, follow whatever path or detours are involved that bring us to the point where we are now, each individually in our own lives, but have there be a destiny, a greater path for us, and we choose which way to get from point A to point B to now. Why can't it be both? And in fact, I remember writing my thesis was on existentialism, living in the moment, living, you know, the past is dead, the future doesn't exist yet. I focused on all the French philosophers that focused on existentialism. The creator of existentialism, really, Jean-Paul Sartre, Albert Camus, Simone de Beauvoir, you know, all the French existentialists I found really fascinating. And so I decided to do my thesis on that subject. And what I realized when all these years, decades later, as I was writing my books, that my whole, this is going to make you laugh. What I realized was in the present moment, while I was writing the books, I was completely focused on the past that would completely change my future. So it was all one and the same. Yep, it was all one and the same. Yep. Yeah.
And that's how it works, right?
Everything happens for a reason. Yeah. And even if we are not able to identify that reason in any given moment, it makes it easier not to put a post-it sticky note on everything where this is a really bad thing that just happened, or this is a really good thing that just happened. Maybe it just is. Maybe it's just part of the past.
Yeah.
Maybe it just is.
I agree.
We're the ones that attach the qualifiers. It's us. We're the ones that make the judgments and attach the qualifiers. I look back on my time growing up in that house, as I know you do as well. And even though you faced some incredible hardships that you have shared with me personally over these years, you faced things very similar to things that I faced. But I look back on that now and I think, oh my God, how much I learned. How much I learned about life and death and the afterlife. How much I grew and changed and evolved spiritually because of growing up in such an incredibly challenging environment. And you and I have talked ad infinitum about soul school, about perhaps Earth, you know, being on this plane of action is basically souls coming back to soul school to learn our lessons. And unfortunately, we live in an environment where the test always precedes the lesson, so it's not fair. And that's why it's filled with so much grief and so many challenges and one obstacle after another. And that's the nature of life. It's not supposed to be easy. because
right.
you don't
you're
learn
right.
anything if you're a grad student and you're sitting in a first grade class at a little tiny
right.
desk learning your ABCs and your do, re, mi's and your 1, 2, 3's. You
yeah.
already know that. You already know that.
Yeah.
So where's the challenge? Where's the obstacle there? What are your colors? Oh, that's blue, that's purple, that's green, that's yellow, that's the rainbow. You know, okay, that was great for kindergarten and first grade. But now we're in grad school. And as we evolve spiritually, as we come to understand that we do not live in a three-dimensional, five-sensory realm. We live in a multi-dimensional universe, and we are just beginning to comprehend its inherent complexities. We are just beginning to understand that we are not relegated to living in a realm that teaches us nothing except how to survive it. If we learn that well, if it teaches us how to survive it, then it's gone well. But, you know, I've talked about the chicken and the egg and how the little baby chicken has to peck its way out of its egg in order to survive, to build the strength, to survive on the other side of the shell. And I think that we're at
Absolutely.
A time now that we're coming out of our shell, that we're really coming to understand that there is so much more to this life. And as we break out of our chrysalis and realize that, oh, holy cow, we grew wings when we were in there. And we start to stretch
yeah.
them out and start to feel them and start to use them and then take flight. That is metamorphosis. That is spiritual metamorphosis. And I really think that you are here. I know you are here to help others understand this. And I think I am as well.
Yes. Yeah, and that's kind of hard. And I talk to my clients about this all the time, that some people just come here to deal with their own life lessons and try to grow and go home and come back and do it again. And that's wonderful. But some of us are here to do all that stuff. We still have to do all our life lessons. We still have to learn all our own human stuff. But on top of it, we're also here to heal people and help people grow and help people get stronger and teach. And that can be difficult to have to do both of those things at once. It's
all
hard.
Of those
it's like
things.
We have double the work. It's like we have a double major. One is human,
yeah.
and one is healer. And not everybody has
no.
that. I think you choose to come back and do that. I don't know if I ever told you this, but in 2014, I found out that somebody that I knew was an off-world channeler.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a session. It was all psychics in the session. And this person channeled this being that came through her. And I'd never been in anything like that again, and I'll tell you the story at the end for why I was completely sure it was a valid thing. So, you know, it's taking a while to come through and into the body and the voice, and everybody's sitting there. And finally, the being asks us if we have any questions. And the psychic sitting across from me, this is a true story, Andrew, I swear, my hand on a Bible, say, are we going to get a TV show? Now, can you imagine if you had a chance to speak to a being that old and that resonant, and your question would be, are we going to get a TV show? And the funniest
oh,
thing was not. That the being completely ignored them, never answered the question, never even looked in their direction. And it turned to me and it pointed at me and it said, you. And I said, me universal or me? And it said, you. I said, okay, it said, you just keep coming back. We tell you you don't have to come back, but you just keep coming back. And swear to God, I had just that morning had a discussion with my mom, who at the time was alive, where she was telling me this was her last life. She was a nine. She was done. She was never coming back. Completion life, never coming back ever. And I had said to her, oh, I can't wait to come back, and I'm not even done with this one yet. I will continue to come back and come back and come back because I love it here. And then the being pointed at me and said that. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So, here's an interesting thing about the story. It's a little dangler at the end. So when the being was coming through, it said it was having a hard time with a human voice because it wasn't used to speaking through human vocal cords. And the next day, after the session, I went to Sedona to go to a conference. And one of the keynote speakers was Gene Houston, who, you know, is known for so many things, but is kind of famous in the New Age community for her dialects. She'll do all these dialects while she speaks. And one of the dialects that she did, she told the story of how as a little girl, she went to go see Helen Keller. Her Girl Scout troop went to go see Helen Keller. And that it was fascinating to listen to someone speak who had never heard a human voice. And she spoke as Helen Keller spoke, and it was like the exact same voice as this being that was channeled through. And that was sort of an eerie moment where I think I believed more than I had in communication with off-worlders. I mean, I believe that they came and they watched and they popped in because my mom had an experience when I was one. But I don't know that I really thought they communicated with people until then. And and it's true. I'll always come back. I'm already signed up for like 5 more trips. I know you're not that way. I know you want to be done and
no.
come home. I know. I know.
Oh, I
do. But you know
do.
You'll miss me next time.
I know, but, you know, in between you could visit. You know.
Yeah.
I've just, oh, God, I've just had it. I really have. I've just had it. I want to go home. I tell them all the time, I'm like, I'll stay because you want me to, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to. And I know that, you know, now that I finally feel a lot more comfortable in my own skin, now that I understand why I'm here, why I had all the experiences that I did as a child and continue to, I get it now. I understand why I'm here, what purpose I serve. It's a lot. It's a lot to take on, but I've done relatively well keeping it together. But I do find three-dimensional living to be incredibly, incredibly oppressive. I constantly feel like the air is being sucked from my lungs. I feel like my mantra is what became my mantra in 2020, which is what George Floyd said as he was being murdered. I can't breathe. And that's how I feel in 3D. So I finally figured out that I don't have to stay in 3D all the time, that I can escape out of it. And I think that the reason that I felt so at home, so a sense of permanence around the farm, was because I was not in 3D most of the time. When I was in that house, living there for those 10 years during my most formative years of life, felt
sure.
like I was living interdimensionally, and that was a lot more comfortable for me. And it was at the farm that I had my first conscious contact that I remembered with extraterrestrials, with what I refer to as the galactic family. And I have to think that it was all the exposure, and some would say overexposure, to the spirit activity in the house that pried my third eye so wide open that I could see what was passing over the house. And it doesn't mean that I didn't have connection and contact prior to that. It doesn't mean that at all, because I feel certain that I did. But it was the first time that I actually remembered what I saw and the impact that it had on me. And that was my personal paradigm shift at 13 years old. And that was 50 years ago. So I've been a contactee for 50 years.
Yeah. Well, and I guess I have too. If my mom and I had that first experience when I was one, then I guess I have too. That was 53 years ago. So I didn't even really think about that so much, you know, until I got involved with you and we started hanging. I don't know that I really thought, put together all the pieces of all the things my mother had said and realized that there was a lot of off-world opportunity around me. Who was I talking to? I think it was Jay Blumke. And we were talking about the Discovery Channel shock docs about the UFOs in the Hudson River Valley. Well, my mom grew up in the Hudson River Valley. And she used to say to me when I was a child in the 70s, because I always knew that story. I was not allowed to tell anybody the story of the off-world gentleman that she saw in our laundry room in Connecticut. But I knew the story. And she would always say there was something about growing up. My mom grew up in Wappingers Falls, New York. There was something about growing up in Wappingers. There, she could feel that there were so many off-worlders around. And this was in the 40s, you know.
Yeah.
I had a story she told that I told Jay on the air last week about how they had these two twin German shepherds named Nip and Tuck, and they were from the same litter. And they were inseparable. And one night there was this big light over the house, and my mom lived in a big house built before the Revolution on a big 40 acres of land outside of Wappingers. And one day there was this big light over the house, and then they couldn't find the dogs. And the dogs never left the area. They never left. They always slept in the barn. They never were far away. They were always following the family. They were nowhere to be found. And they never did find Nip again. And a week later, they found Tuck cowering in a corner of the barn. And he was just never the same dog after that. And I think, you know, some off-world folks maybe took Nip for a little trip and freaked Tuck out. So that was another story that I had known forever. And it was interesting because the property where my mom grew up, and I know we've talked about this off-air, but and I have talked about it on the air, a metaphysical church called the Chapel of the Sacred Mirrors bought that property about 10 years ago. And Alex and Allison Gray own it, and they're lovely people. And I had them on the show once, and I was throwing out all mom's stories at Deer Hill because, you know, I wanted to, I wanted to know what they knew. And they have also, not only have they felt the off-world presence there so much, but they actually have like a little kind of shrine to the off-worlders. They're both fine artists that they have built to sort of attract that energy. And just now people are starting to talk about the ghosts of the UFO activity in the Hudson River Valley. So, I mean, I think my mom had it way back then, you know, and believed that she was an abductee. When we moved here to Los Angeles, she developed these three little dots behind her ear. And one time we were watching a show about off-worlders, and they were talking about abductees that had that. And she said, I've always felt, since the day we moved here, like they come and take me. So I know you're not going to agree with this, baby, but I tell them, please do not take me. I would not like that.
But if you, well, you know, the thing is, too, that if they know that you would not like that, they'll make sure you don't remember. But if they...
then maybe that's the story.
Yeah, they'll make sure that you don't remember. Yeah, you have to I don't know. I think you have to ask to remember. I mean, I even, and I love them dearly. I do. I love them dearly. I refer to them as my galactic family for a reason. They are. I feel a very strong sense of kinship with the races that I'm in contact with. And I don't have any fear of them at all. None. None. But I will tell you that the night that I had that massive healing here laying in the bed that I'm in the room that I'm in, and something depressed the bottom corner of the bed, and it was as though a sarcophagus was coming up over me, very slowly rising up over my feet and my legs. And I was just laying in bed listening to an interview on TV. It was about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I must have appeared to be asleep, but I was wide awake. I just had my eyes closed, and I wasn't moving. I remember distinctly. It was like 4.5, 5 years ago, and I was listening to Rachel Maddow interview John Brennan. And it was the first time that he had spoken out publicly. And I was transfixed by the interview. So I stayed up really late so I could watch it again. And I was laying in bed, and this unit is moving up over my body, and the heat in my feet and the pressure on my feet and my legs, I should have been screaming and writhing in pain. And for all that heat and all that pressure, it didn't hurt. It was not painful, but it was moving up my body, up my body, up my body. And when it got to my sternum below my breasts, I got up. I propped myself up on my pillow and looked in the room. There was obviously light in the room because I had the TV on, and there was nothing visible on this bed, but I could clearly see where the bottom corner of the mattress was depressed, was, you know, smushed down in a perfect square. Something square was very heavy, and it was on my bed and had literally smushed my mattress down by inches. But when I sat up, because I did not want whatever it was that was coming over my body to cover my face, I had a moment of panic. I did. I had a moment of just a moment of panic, like, no, I'm awake. I'm awake. And it stopped, and it receded.
Wow.
And as it went off my feet, it lifted up, the bottom of the bed lifted up, and it was over. At first, I didn't move at all because it was not long after my sister April had died, and I thought it was a visitation from her. But I was wrong about that. It was them. And so it was almost, Sheena, it was like I was drugged, instantly drugged. As soon as I laid my head back down on the pillow, I was gone. And I didn't wake up until 11:45 the next day. And when I did, all the excruciating pain in my body was gone. It was gone. And I got up out of bed. I had sprained my lower lumbar. I felt like my body was snapped in half. It felt like I had broken my back. And I was laying in bed I couldn't be touched. I had to crawl the wall to the bathroom for days and days. I was in absolute agony. I never asked for their help. I never asked for intervention. It didn't even occur to me. Every day my father was saying, are you well enough to go to the chiropractor? And my answer was no. Nobody touches me. No. No.
Right.
And it was so bad that all I could do was just lay in a prone position. Not even a prone position, kind of sideways with pillows tucked between my knees and something up against my back. And always, you know, between the ice pack and the heating pad, just trying to find some comfort. I was living on fistful of Motrin. That was how I was surviving. And that happened to me. And the next morning, not only did I hop up out of bed with my father pacing the house, wringing his hands because he didn't want to disturb me, but he was so concerned because never, and I mean never, do I sleep till noon, ever. And so he was very concerned, but he didn't want to disturb me. And so I came bouncing out into the kitchen, completely upright, and not any pain in my body. And the first thing he said was, oh, my God, I can't believe how tall you are. And I said, the compression in my spine, everything that had, I mean, my full adult height, which, you know, we all lose some height as we age. My full adult height of 5'9.5" had been completely, utterly restored. So whatever happened to me, it stopped when they realized that I was actually conscious, and then they came back and finished. And I've never had any pain like that in my body since then, since that treatment. And I don't know if I went off-world or if they just came to me. I don't care how it works. It works, and I was healed. And I am eternally grateful for them because I'm still functional because of them.
So beautiful.
And I don't even care who it is. I don't care what race it is. I don't care if it's the Arcturians, if it's the Pleiadians. I don't care if it's the Reptilians. I don't care if it's the Greys. I don't care who it is. All I know is that they love me enough to heal me. And so they have my eternal gratitude. Eternal gratitude.
Wow.
And it might be a race that I have not even yet to identify. I've seen a number of different races. I've seen beings, entities that even shocked me because of how they looked.
Sure.
Peanut has seen them. But I have told them ever since I got the Peanut, please don't do anything to freak my dog out. Please, you know, please be mindful of how much she means to me. And if I need to go off world for a little while, please leave my dog behind. You know, please do, because I don't ever want her to be traumatized the way your mother's dogs were traumatized.
Absolutely. And isn't that interesting? It just occurred to me right now. Isn't that interesting that all that UFO activity on that property, and it was bought by a family, the Greys? Isn't that interesting?
Well, but isn't that
there are no
interesting?
Accidents, my friend. Yeah. You are wonderful, and I adore you, and I can't wait for us to do this again. Where can people find you online?
Just Google my name, and I'm all over Facebook. I invite everybody, all your listeners, to hop into the live stream we're doing from the farm on the Halloween weekend, and that's on the Dark Zone. You can find it there. And I'm all over Facebook. I'm just kind of everywhere. Just, you know, find me. Buttercup Brigade, my fan page.
I love it. I love it so much. And if you need anything, just send me an email, and I will pass over all the links I know for where you can find Andrea. Thank you so much for being here, the wonderful Andrea Perrin. If you missed those links, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, raisingthevibrationradio.com, and I'm always here Tuesdays and Wednesdays, Tuesday at 5, Wednesday at 6, both Pacific time, at liveparanormal.com. Check us out there at iheartradio.com and all of our affiliates. Till I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity. Always raise your vibration, and you know what? I'll see you next time.